This is Olive, and I'm 11 years old, and I live in Southside.
This is Cooper, and I'm 4 years old.
This is Elena. I'm 13 years old and live in Spickley.
This is Julian. I'm 14 years old and live in Highland Park. And this is the Kittsburg Podcast.
Welcome to the Kittsburg Podcast. We love interviewing remarkable people and sharing their thoughts with you. And also filling you in on Pittsburgh gems, cool places that you might not know about, but you and your kids will love. I'm Kittsburgh's editor, Melissa Rayworth, and I am here with my friends and coworkers, each of them a parent like me.
Hi, everybody. I'm the director of Kittsburgh, Yuling Chang, and I can't wait to dive into this episode. Along with an inspiring interview, we've got honest intel from local teens as they answer a question that parents might just be curious about.
And I'm Christine Sorensen, a KDKA anchor and Kittsburgh producer, and I'm excited to hear about today's Pittsburgh gem, which is actually a collection of cool places. Melissa, tell us about them.
So we have put together an updated version of the Kittsburgh Family Yoga Guide. Now, I know there are a lot of adults out there probably who've tried yoga, but this can be a wonderful thing for your entire family to do together. So in our guide that's recently been updated, we have a lot of possibilities. There are places first for prenatal yoga if you have not had your baby yet. And they are throughout the region. We've got places in Mount Lebanon, Wexford, Bethel Park. There are also some really cool mommy and me type yoga classes. And those, of course, don't have to just be mommy. They can be dad and me too. In places like Munn Hall, the Strip District, and the North Hills. We also mention in this guide some online options because there are probably days when it's easier to be home with the kids, but you want a healthy, fun activity like this. So some stretching and some yoga at home online can be wonderful. And we do include a list of yoga studios throughout the region that mainly cater to parents, because I think sometimes that is a nice relaxing break for parents.
I'm a huge fan of yoga. I mean, I wish I could do it every day, but I do it when I can. And I think it's such a great thing to give as a gift to kids as a way to relax their minds, stretch their bodies. There's just so many benefits.
And I'm surprised. So I did a class with my younger daughter, just one class, and she will still do some of the stretches from that class when she realizes she just needs to calm her body down. Wow. So it's like you said, you're giving your kid a gift for life.
Yeah, I really think so too. And, you know, we would love to know if you are aware of a cool yoga studio somewhere in the Pittsburgh region that does offer classes that kids and adults can take together, let us know. Anytime you can email info@kittsburgh.org, and we would love to add your suggestions to this guide. You'll find this updated family yoga guide with plenty of other guides at kittsburgh.org. Now, stay tuned for our interview with Dr. Christian Conti.
Pittsburgh is Kittsburgh. You're listening to the Kittsburgh Podcast.
Parents, how many times have your kids been cranky or they have a tantrum and there's no apparent reason? And kids, I'm sure you remember getting upset and you just really don't know why. Dr. Christian Conti is here to bring some clarity by explaining how our minds often want to match our bodies. Now, Dr. Conti is one of the country's most accomplished mental health specialists in the field of anger and emotional management, and he's the author of Walking Through Anger and Zen Parent, Zen Child, among many other books, podcasts, and TV shows. And we're so excited to have him here in the studio with us in Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much for having me. I love being here in person.
Absolutely. So first of all, explain what you mean by how the mind wants to match the body.
Okay. So this is one of the most eye-opening concepts that I've ever had the blessing to encounter. I noticed it when I first started doing therapy with people. Let's take a common example. How many times have we all been hungry? And because we were hungry, we felt a little agitated and irritable. And then the next thing you know, we start picking at our loved one. Well, what about this? Let's nitpick that. Let's nag here and there. And the truth is that we feel agitated or irritable because we're hungry. One of the coolest things to learn about neuroscience is that hunger is seated in the middle of what's called the hypothalamus, which is right in the center of your limbic system. In the middle of your emotions is your hunger. Mm. So it makes sense when you're hungry, when you're tired, that you're going to feel agitated and irritable. Now, here's the clincher. When your body feels that way, your mind will race to make up a story to make sense. So if I feel agitated and irritable, I'm going to go, well, it must be you. It must be something you're doing or something other people are doing. But when you can learn to say, you know what? I feel really hungry right now. I feel really agitated. I just want you to know it has nothing to do with you. If I come across short right now, I tell my wife, it's just because you look like a piece of pizza to me right now. And if I can just express it, do you understand how many fights and arguments you won't have to engage in? Because they're unnecessary. If a toddler is upset and crying, you go, oh no, did she eat? Is she well fed? Like, is she tired? We can tell that for infants and toddlers. But somewhere along the way, we forget to look for that. And the truth is, we all get hungry every day. We all get tired every day. So this is a really powerful message. Pay attention to how your mind wants to match your body.
So this is really interesting, right? I have two kids, and you're right. When they were younger, I had that checklist of like, when did you last eat? Do I need to change your diaper? What do I need to do, right? And I don't have that same checklist as my kids are growing older. So is there a checklist for parents that we should ask ourselves in these moments? And is there a checklist also for the kids that are young?
That is a great question. So I believe it begins with ourselves. If you want your children to be Zen, you've got to be Zen yourself. And so when you ask for signals or signs or what can we look for, I would begin with yourself. So I would say, oh, I'm starting to feel agitated right now. Wait a minute. Is this really my loved one? Is it really my children? Is it really the neighbor? Or is it, oh, no, I didn't eat yet. I am really hungry. And then you start to check it yourself. And the more you practice it within yourself, the easier it will be to see it in others. Let me give you a real quick example. There's an old adage that says, never go to bed angry. And it's beautiful. It's well-intentioned. Unfortunately, in the world I work in, specializing in violence, I see all too often that people get into unnecessary and really angry fights because either one or both people were overly tired. Remember that hypothalamus? It's right there in the limbic system and you're tired. So now I feel so cranky, I start fighting. Well, it's got to be this. Well, what about 2 weeks ago? What about 4 years ago? And really intelligent people are creative, so they make up more and more of a story to match. The more the story gets intense, the more extreme words, you never listen to me. Oh, more cortisol, more adrenaline. And so it really becomes a cycle. And then one of the greatest lessons we can teach our children is that just because you feel something doesn't mean you have to run from it. It's okay to sit with an uncomfortable emotion and just sit with it for a moment. You know what? This is really uncomfortable. I don't like feeling like this, but it's okay. It'll have a beginning, a middle, and an end. My emotions, no matter how intense they ever get, will have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Emotions come and go. Actions can't be undone. Unfortunately, words can't be unsaid.
Well, and this really makes me think of teenagers because I now have a 20, 18, and 14-year-old, and they need more sleep. They need more food because they're growing, yep. And their emotions are more extreme because of their developing brains.
So that's it. There's an old model called the triune brain, and let's just use this as a metaphor, but it kind of makes sense. As soon as you're born, your base part of your brain, breathing, heartbeat, that's ready to go, fully functional. But then the part of your brain with emotions, well, that's ready to take in experiences. But your higher level thinking, well, that doesn't fully develop. You ready for this? Till mid-20s, which means you have teenagers who are incredibly bright, a lot of emotions. And what they're doing is because they feel so extreme, that frontal cortex isn't fully developed, they'll start to use extreme words. You know, a teenager breaks up after 2 days and say, I'll never meet anyone again. Nothing will ever go my way. Well, those extreme words then infuse more intensity. Here's maybe a best way to teach this. Let's say that we all down 3 energy drinks right now. Bah, bah, bah. Okay. Yeah. You think about it.
Oh, boy.
Our heart starts racing. Our body starts to feel physically anxious. Now, when the body feels physically anxious, our mind, remember, will race to make up a story to make sense. So what do normal, high-functioning adults do? Well, you might say, oh my gosh, I forgot to send that email. I forgot to pay that bill. Did we ever talk to so-and-so about this? And now your creative mind is filling in a reason for why you must feel so anxious versus saying, I just drank too much caffeine right now, and I'm going to need to let this ride out. So the more creative you are, well, the more intense your stories can get. And then when you add extreme words, always, never, nobody, everything, then you add more cortisol, more adrenaline, and blah, 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 it just builds up.
You know, in your book, Zen Parent and Zen Child, I love how you talk about how important it is for parents to model the behavior, right? Not just understand, but model the behavior. So tell us more about that.
I think the classic example is, let's say parents who are smoking cigarettes, and then they're telling their children, hey, don't smoke. Well, the children are watching them, and they're seeing it more than they're listening to the words. But let's take it to an everyday example that many, many people do, which is not having self-control and then wanting our children to have self-control. So maybe you lose control and yell, impulsively yell. And then when your children get impulsive, you say, don't do that. You shouldn't do that. We're really teaching our children how to handle stress. One of the really powerful research, a meta-analysis, they took a bunch of different studies from parenting styles from all over the world. And what they saw was the number one parenting skill we could ever give our children is love. Cool, that's universal. But do you know the number two skill was how parents handled their own stress? And I think something we were really mindful of with our daughter was she came into this world and she didn't have any information. This experience of life, I get to be her guide. And so I need to first and foremost role model. What does it mean to take care of my own stress and have self-control rather than just demand it from her when I don't show it?
That's so important for kids of all ages, right?
Yes. For everyone, in relationships, if in your own partnership, if you're upset with something your spouse is doing, your spouse is reflecting what you're doing as well, is a really eye-opening statement. People see your actions, not your intentions. You judge people by their actions, but you judge yourself by your intentions. Mm-hmm. So, A, you're driving down the highway and someone cuts in front of you and you say, what a jerk. But if you cut someone off and they get mad, you say, oh, what's the big deal? I just made a mistake. I didn't mean to do that. So if you do it, it's not a big deal. If they do it, oh, my goodness. And the problem is we have a tendency to maximize the pain others cause us and minimize the pain we cause others. Well, remember, people see your actions, not your intentions. And here's the thing. It doesn't matter if my life is devoted to peace and compassion. It doesn't matter if I mean to be intimidating or not. My physical presence can be. So I need to be mindful of that.
Well, I love in your book, too, that you talk about other actions that you can take, such as even if you're a bad dancer, dance impulsively with your kids, because then you're emitting joy and going back to your lesson of love, right?
Yes, yes. Like, what a beautiful experience of life. Like, being a father is the greatest honor of my life. Our daughter's 20. It's a feeling that, like, you know, you guys know as parents, like, as a parent, it's the greatest blessing you can ever have. And I want to give her the best. I want to show her role model, what to expect from a man in her life. As a father, I'm really mindful of that. I remember working with teenage girls when I was getting my PhD, late 90s, early 2000s. And I remember talking to one girl who was particularly spectacular. She would sit with kids who didn't seem to have a lot of friends. She would mingle with everyone. And she was popular, kind to everyone. And I remember sitting and talking with her. And I said, what is it that you just got something about you? And I think it's amazing. And she said, I'm very close with my father. And this is before we had our daughter. I thought, well, boy, if we ever have a child, if we ever have a daughter, I'm going to make sure I step up because girls need their father. Children need their parents. And I believe they need our best version. Now, look, we make mistakes. We're human. We're going to mess up. But what an amazing role model to call yourself on it when you did it. So let's say you do yell. You know what, honey? I'm really sorry. I was so hungry. I let that get the best of me. I will be mindful of that in the future. What a great lesson, because now the children are learning that you're learning too.
So you came up with something called yield theory. Explain what this is and how it applies to parenting.
Yes. So yield theory is an approach to communication. It's now an evidence-based approach. It is about meeting people where they are, getting around their defensiveness, and then speaking in ways that can be heard, even if it's an intensely emotional situation. So there was a foolish man who was, he was charged with leading a group of people up a mountain. So he took off full speed. He gets to the top of the mountain. He looks and there's nobody with him. They're all still on the bottom. So he starts yelling, you should be up here with me. I had it tough. I started down there. I made it up here. And he's yelling all this logic, but they can't even see him, let alone hear him. So he becomes known as the fool on the mountain. Now, this story exemplifies why yield theory is so important. Because even if you stand on the mountain and have all the answers and all the logic and all the reason, if people can't hear you, they can't hear you. It doesn't matter. And so it is what I call a cartoon world. So there are two worlds we live in, the cartoon world and the real world. The cartoon world is our world of shoulds. People should think, feel, believe, and behave the way I think they should. It's logical, it's rational. But then there's the real world, how people actually think, feel, believe, and behave. And as long as you align your expectations with your cartoon world, you're going to be let down. But here's the clincher. The world's not letting you down because the world just is what it is. What's really letting you down are your own expectations. So this year, 27 years I've been doing this work as a professional. For 27 years I've spent helping people learn to align their expectations with reality. Because the more prepared we are for reality, the better chance we're going to do well in it. So that fool on the mountain, we think, well, that's some far-off tale. Actually, I made it up to make it sound like it was an old tale. But it sounds like it's about others. It's about ourselves. How many times have we tried to talk to someone and said, well, I shouldn't have to tell you this again. Well, I shouldn't have – you shouldn't have said that. But they did say it. Or you do have to tell them again. And so, again, when you align your expectations with reality, you're more prepared for it. And it really is a game changer.
That makes so much sense. I had not thought of it that way, but I can think of all sorts of examples in my life.
It's all of us. I mean, all of us. Me too. Like, I just want you to hear that we, even though I created this concept of cartoon world, I still have it. The goal is to be mindful. Catch yourself when you're in it and say, hold on a second, that's cartoon world. And I mean, practicing it for decades certainly helps me readjust really quickly. But those initial thoughts are there. You know, you shouldn't have done that. You did do that. It's not the end of the world. I can handle it.
Yeah. And I imagine that's something you can practice, too, if you're conscious of it every day. You know, I'm wondering at what point, though, does a family need to go see professional therapists for help?
Really great question. I believe as a professional counselor, it's really healthy just to talk things out. Having a neutral person in the room can be really helpful for the discussion. Now, granted, there's usually a family member who thinks they're going to take everybody to counseling and then the counselor's going to back up everything they said and they're right about everything. But that's a reason to go because then the counselor can say, you know what, you play a role in this too. Like, we all play a role. And I think that's one of the things why families, couples would enjoy coming to see me because I always believe we all play a role. It's not who's right, who's wrong, who's good, who's bad. It's we all play a role. And what a cool example to go to therapy and talk to someone and say, look, the therapist is going, all I can see are your actions. And I know when you do this, this person does this. And the more you learn, this leads to this. And then it gets light shined on it. Just a little step more toward conscious communication. And I think that's a really cool thing. So I don't think you have to wait till anything's broken. I don't think you have to wait till there's a big issue. I honestly think it's really cool just to go and check in on your communication. You might learn little things like people see your actions, not your intentions, or your mind wants to match your body. And you'll be like, hey, this is cool. What's beautiful are the way you just received that information. I never thought about it like that. What an open, beautiful perspective. When you can role model that perspective for children, they learn. It's not about who's right, who's wrong, who has the answers, who doesn't. It's we're all still learning.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Everyone has something to learn. I have learned so much from you, Christian. Thank you so much for being part of this today.
Thank you for having me. I was so grateful to invite me in person. I love to be in person and actually get to see people.
So, first of all, the idea of the more zen and calm the parent is, the more calm your children are going to be, is something that I finally figured out through many years of parenting, but I wish somebody had said that to me before I had my kids. I think he has so much wisdom that he's sharing about just stopping and noticing your own emotions and what's going on with you. Not only will help you make better decisions in interacting with your kids, but you're modeling that behavior for them.
So much of what we do is what they learn, right? I remember he said, people see your actions, not your intentions. Mm-hmm. And often we have good intentions, but maybe that's not how we're acting. But my favorite thing he said is the number one skill of parenting is love. And, you know, we have to sometimes forgive ourselves because we're not perfect, but mm-hmm. we do love our kids.
And I love that he said, just show that, right? Show how you love your kids. It does not have to be perfect. And what I appreciated from the interview was his comment about aligning expectations with reality, right? Not with this cartoon world that we all want to live in that's perfect, but actual reality and where you are, and that is okay.
the whole spirit of this interview, I feel like he was giving great advice about how to be a really wonderful parent. But he also, as a parent himself, has so much understanding that you have to give yourself patience and give your kids patience. I also loved that he mentioned that therapy can be something that you don't have to wait till there's a problem to do. It can just be a wonderful way to work on like family communication. It can just be to make things even better.
Right. We go to the doctor annually for our physicals, mm-hmm. So why not a mental health check?
Yeah. You can find more mental health resources and information at kidsburg.org. And in a moment, it's time for Tea with Teens.
You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburg.
On this episode of the Kidsburg Podcast, our team of teen reporters asked other local teens this question. When you're feeling stressed or angry, what are some ways you help your body and mind become more calm? Here's what they discovered.
When I'm stressed or angry, I take a break in my room and I listen to music to try to help calm me down. And sometimes I read, just like take a relaxing break if I was in a stressful situation.
When I feel stressed or angry, I play video games, or sometimes I take a nap, or I can drive. So like I'll go for a drive. I'll say like I'm going to get food or get a snack, and I'll just go drive and listen to music.
When I'm stressed or angry, I like to hug my stuffies. I think it was like one of my first ever plushies. It's this really old Red Panda plushie that I'm really attached to.
What I like to do to let me relax sometimes when I'm feeling anxious is think of like the bright side of things and maybe do something I enjoy and take a few deep breaths.
What I do to relax would be like either talking to my friends, like watching videos to calm down.
My name is Laura. I am 13 years old.
Hi, my name is Annika. I am an 8th grade student and I live in Mount Lebanon.
My name is Laurent. I'm 17 and I live in Sheridan.
My name is Sue. I'm 12 years old.
My name is Waylon. I'm a 7th grade student and I live in Franklin Park.
I feel so good after this episode. And we've got plenty more inspiration and ideas coming in the next Kidsburg Podcast episode.
That's right. We're rolling out new podcast episodes for our third season. And you can check out previous episodes where we talk with everyone from astronauts and Olympians to magicians and AI experts.
Just go to kidsburg.org/podcasts to find them all. And be sure to sign up for our weekly free newsletter for all the intel on resources and events that can help you raise the kids you love in the Pittsburgh region and beyond. Thanks for joining us on the Kidsburg Podcast.
This is Rocco. I'm in 7th grade and homeschooled, and this is the Kidsburg Podcast.
On the next Kidsburg Podcast, we talk with therapist and gaming expert Matt Missar. Plus, we take you to Museum Lab, and we spill the tea with teens, getting their thoughts on what local high schoolers wish their parents understood better about online gaming.
Until then, we hope you'll visit kidsburg.org to find resources, get insight from local experts, and discover all the cool events happening in the Pittsburgh region.